Good morning, everyone. Greetings in Jesus' name to each one this morning. Watch your thoughts, they become actions. Watch your actions, they become your character. There's a tremendous dissertation on our thought life there this morning. So have you heard about the Christmas star? The one that we'll be able to see Monday night? So this tomorrow night, just after sunset, if we have a clear night, it's not cloudy, if you look towards the southwest, so down over in there, you'll see the Christmas Star 2020. And you'll want to take a good look at it, if you can see it, because you will never, ever see it again. The last time it happened was about 800 years ago, and it's going to be close to that if the world lasts that long till it happens again. So it's an interesting phenomenon that's going to be taking place. It's actually not a star. If you've read about it, you know it's the planets Jupiter and Venus that are going to look like they're quite close together. They're actually not, of course. They're still millions and hundreds of thousands of millions of miles apart. But it's going to look like they are, and so it's going to make an extra bright star over there. I'd like to look at the Christmas star. A star that prompted an epic journey that led to misery, delight, and confirmation. I'd like to title my message this morning, In Search of the Star. So turn with me, if you would, to Matthew chapter 2. We're going to read this account here. It's interesting, this account is found only once in the Bible. But we can find some details in here that I think can lead to a deeper appreciation of Christ. So we're going to read Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born, king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. Now I'm just going to pause there for just a little bit. We're going to be touching on then the tradition of royal courts to visit each other. But notice they didn't say they want to come visit him. They said they want to come worship him. So that's a difference. Verse 3, when Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child, and when ye have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were coming to the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. Who were the wise men? Where did they come from? How many were there? What about the star? What was it? Was it the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn? Was it, as is a very popular theory, a conjunction of Jupiter and Venus occurring in the constellation Leo, in conjunction with another very bright star, Regulus? Does it matter? First of all, there's a lot of speculation on that, and it's interesting to me, so I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but it is speculation, and so let's remember that. So that the text does not specify any of these facts. The wise men themselves, you may have seen them referred to as magi. We know that they were from the east, and it's generally understood they probably came from either Persia or Babylon. There are some accounts, but they're generally discredited, that they may have come from a country called Shur, which is understood to be China. I find it interesting and even probable that they likely did come from Persia or Babylon, partly because who conquered Israel? Who conquered Judah? It was the Babylonians who were then taken over by the Persians. So if you think about it, if they took all the treasures from the temple back to Babylon, what would have been included in those treasures? There would have been the prophecies. They would have had the books of Genesis, Numbers, Isaiah, Psalms, Micah. And in the court of Babylon, they would have been directly influenced by Daniel himself. And so I find that an interesting supposition that they came from either the courts of Babylon or Persia, because they would have had an access to prophecies that a lot of others would not have had. Remember, Daniel was the chief of whom? The wise men of Babylon. And all the way that ties together just fascinates me. And if they were scholars of all the wisdom and historical records that were stored up in the royal courts, isn't it feasible that they would have studied these prophecies and perhaps recognized the significance? And the star that they followed has engendered a good deal of discussion all the way since the early church, who many of the early church thought it was actually an angel star, perhaps composed of the legions of angels who serenaded the shepherds, due to the way that it moved. So that's one supposition. Some thought it was maybe a comet or a meteor. A very fascinating study to me done by a man named Rick Larson. He took a computer program and using mathematics and the way that the heavenly bodies all move very precisely over years of time, used a computer model to turn back the heavens to see what it would have looked like over this period of time. And what he opts for is a triple conjunction. So what we're going to see tomorrow night is a double conjunction, two heavenly bodies lining up. And he said that in that time there would have been the planet Jupiter, the planet Venus, converging with that star Regulus, and that may have been what they saw. I'm just going to read a little bit from a interview here with him. He was quoting an ancient Jewish writer who was talking about a particular school of magi, the Eastern school, and he praises these magi. He says that they understood the natural order and are able to explain the natural order to others. And they were, according to Philo, this ancient Jewish writer, probably what we might call proto-scientists. And a proto-scientist is basically an early scientist. Likely there were five astronomical conjunctions that took place over a span of time from August of 3 BC to June of 2 BC. When one planet passes another and is seen from Earth, they line up. That would have been of great significance to these astrologer advisors. The conjunctions involved the constellation Leo the Lion, the planet Venus, the planet Jupiter, and the star Regulus. To the Babylonians, the lion represented Israel, Venus was motherhood, Jupiter stood for fatherhood or kingship, and Regulus symbolized royalty. Put these together in the Babylonian mindset, and what do you get? A clear and repeated message that a grand king had been born in Israel. So it's interesting. Whether that's actually what happened or not, we don't know. But it's an interesting study regardless. But something to remember about all of that, that interesting as it is speculation. It's all speculation. We can find information. I'll do that again. We can find information to back up any of our pet theories. The internet is full of theories, and it even has a few facts. Most arguments are driven by theories, because if there was mostly fact, we would be lining up, right? But there's a lot of theories out there. Now, do I want to bring a message on theory? Something that people have been arguing about or debating over? No. Because Jesus wasn't born in theory. He was born in fact. And we know some of the facts, and we know enough that we can find the lessons the Bible has for us in this account. And so I'd like to look at three things this morning as we ponder this passage in Matthew 2 and draw parallels that can speak to us today and also look at some of the prophecies that were pointing forward to Christ. So three things I'd like to look at is, Why did the wise men follow the star? Did they understand what they sought? And did they find what they were looking for? So first of all, I'd like to turn very quickly here to Genesis chapter 1. Why did they follow the star? Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 says, "And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and days and years." So not only for time, but for signs. Now, astrology or divination, so using the stars to predict futures, to tell fortunes, determine outcomes, define personalities, was forbidden and was a killing offense in the Old Testament. It was forbidden in the New Testament as well. Simon the sorcerer would have been a diviner. And so that was forbidden. That's, God says, don't use the heavens for that. But there's lots of verses about how we should use the heavens. Job 38, verses 31 through 33 says, "Canst thou bind the sweet influence of Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou bring forth Masrith in his season, or canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons?" That's talking about stars and constellations. And it's talking about the power of God. He's saying, can you comprehend the magnitude of a God who can control these heavenly bodies? Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4 say, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" So it's clear from many such verses as these that there are good reasons to study the heavens, and that's to draw us closer to God. Jeremiah, I like the contrast here. Jeremiah chapter 10, verses 1 and 2 says, "Hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them." So God is giving a clear contrast here in the way that we're supposed to look at the stars. He's saying, don't look at them and be terrified of what's going to happen. You're supposed to look at them and be in fear and awe of me. And so when I think of why the wise men followed the star, they saw something that was happening that was significant. And why did they then follow it? That's what makes me think maybe they had access to some of these prophecies that led them toward Israel. There are prophecies that talk about God specifically as a star. The most prominent one, or the coming of Christ, is in Numbers chapter 24, where Balaam was summoned to curse Israel. And that was what was supposed to happen. And instead, what came out was a beautiful prophecy of the coming Messiah. Numbers chapter 24, verse 17 says, "I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth." Now it's interesting that it says a scepter shall rise. That's talking about a king again. So here's a star, and here's a king. Isaiah 9, 6, and 7, which we also have up here, says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." And another prophecy in Isaiah chapter 32, verse 1 says, "Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment." So we've got clear evidences in these prophecies of royalty, of kingship. If the Babylonian or Persian astrologers did indeed have access to these prophecies, when they saw what was happening, maybe they connected the dots. Maybe they said, there's the star that's coming out of Jacob. Something interesting is happening here, something unusual. And see what it says. It's talking about a king. There's some royalty that's going on here. So when they looked for the king of the Jews, that's what they were looking for, is royalty. And as they went on their way talking about this, saying, "We're looking for the king of the Jews," it got the attention of the rulers, didn't it? Because everybody wants to know who the next president is, right? Everybody wants to know who the new king is, too. And so God used this, he used this journey as a way of letting the heathen kings and the worldly kings know that a new king was coming. So what are we doing with the star? There's many indications in the Bible that show us the way that God wants us to go, as the wise men followed the star. What are we doing with those? Are we seeing the leading that God is putting in front of us? Are we too busy doing our own things? The reason the wise men followed the star is because they saw it. They were looking up. We miss a lot of the beauty and purpose that God has for us because we're so busy taking care of our own interests and making sure that other people know what we think they should be doing. We narrow our lives down to a tiny speck of light and assume that we're broad-minded. We look for all reasons that someone else is wrong and use those to justify why we must be right without ever examining our own motives. In many ways, we're not following the star because we're too focused on the mud we and others throw. Gossip, tactlessness, baiting, politics. These are clouds covering our views of the heavens where God sits and looks down. He's beckoning to his people to follow the star and come closer to him, but they're too busy asking why things are necessary or important and if following is truly necessary. Can we stop pursuing our pet agendas long enough to look up and see the star that's shining brightly? Its glow a beacon guiding us to follow in the paths that God creates? Can we follow the star to Christ? The wise men, perhaps inadvertently, told the story of Christ, of the new king, to the people that we met. Are we seeking ways to point Christ, to point people to the king? Or are we just trying to fit in? Secondly, did they understand what they sought? And I'd like to turn to Micah here. Micah chapter 2, there's a beautiful prophecy that I love. I'm sorry, Micah chapter 5. Now, Micah was from Judah. And I'm just going to draw something really quickly up here just to kind of give you an idea of why history is so exciting to me and why I love the way that these things flow together. So we're going to call that roughly the kingdom of Israel. It was then divided. We had the northern kingdom was Israel, the southern kingdom was Judah. So Assyria came down from the north and conquered Israel. Hezekiah was the king of Judah, and Assyria came down and tried to conquer Jerusalem as well. Hezekiah prayed to God. The army of Sennacherib was destroyed. They went back. Assyria never conquered Judah. Now, Jerusalem was in Judah. So Jerusalem is where the temple was. It's where all the records would have been kept. It's where all these scrolls, these precious manuscripts that these scribes had painstakingly written out, they would have been kept in Jerusalem at the temple. Assyrians never got to it. Eventually, the Babylonians conquered Assyria, and it was This was, of course, over a span of decades and I think even hundreds of years maybe. And Babylon eventually grew to the point where they came and conquered Judah. So they came down from up over here. And they conquered Judah. When they got there, the temple was intact. All these writings were intact, these prophecies. There had been, Micah would have been a contemporary to the Assyrians. Then they came down and were destroyed. And so his prophecies, more than likely, had been written down and cataloged by the time that the Babylonians came. And so let's see what Micah has to say here in Micah chapter 5, verse 2. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been of old, from everlasting. Now, more than likely, the Babylonians studied the manuscripts of these places. The Persians, we know, did. Persians under King Cyrus the Great, one of his main tenets was the places that he conquered, the lands that he conquered, he let them keep their religion, He let them keep their traditions. He just wanted them to know that he was their ruler and that they need to pay tribute to him. But it was important to him that they followed what they were used to. And so he wanted to learn what they had to know. And so if they read the prophecies of Isaiah, it would have been a confirmation to them. Here it says that we're going to come and conquer them, and we did. You know, go us. So it's very likely that these very prophecies would have been studied. Now, the prophecy here in Micah led them in a very definite direction. It led them towards Bethlehem. Why then did they stop in Jerusalem and talk to King Herod? Some people speculate that the star disappeared over Jerusalem, and then after they talked to King Herod, it reappeared and led them to Bethlehem. I think the answer may in part lie with the way that they thought of the king. Did they understand what they were seeking? A few more prophecies that talk about kingliness. Genesis 49:10 says, "The scepter," again, symbol of royalty, "shall not depart from Judah." Again, that's significant. That's what the Babylonians came and captured. "Shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be." And then there's the prophecy of Balaam, where he talked about the star out of Jacob and the scepter out of Israel. So if they had access to these prophecies, why didn't they go then to Bethlehem? Why did they go to Jerusalem? It's because it seems that it's because they thought they were looking for a literal king. That's what makes sense. Where else would you go? Jerusalem is the place of the royal palace. It makes sense that you would go there. And what happened when they went to the place where the king should be, and they visited it, and they told the king there their mission? This is where the story turns tragic. This is where the prophecy of Jeremiah was gruesomely fulfilled. Jeremiah 31. Let's turn there as well. Jeremiah 31, verse 15. "Thus saith the Lord, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping, Rahel weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children, because they were not. King Herod sent out and killed all these innocent people." And that shows they didn't fully understand who they were looking for. They were looking for a real king. Maybe if they would have paid a little bit more attention to some of the prophecies, ones like Isaiah 7:14 that say, "Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." Can anyone tell me what Emmanuel means? God with us. Where's the divinity, the royalty in that? That's clearly talking about something divine. And in Isaiah 9:6, where it says, "His name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." What earthly king is a Prince of Peace? If these wise men had been able to discern the working of God in the scriptures, as well as they were able to discern the movements of celestial bodies, they wouldn't have made this error, and they would have figured out what really happened. But in looking for royalty, they missed the divine. And that's an easy thing for us to do as well. We search for the grand and the glorious, the here and now, the easy and evident, and we miss the divine. We miss the still small voice, the small town, the humble manger in Christ himself. Looking for royalty, they inadvertently cause a massacre of innocents. Maybe the lesson here is they look too high. Maybe they were still out among the stars when they should have been looking at what their actions would do to people around them. Maybe we try too hard at theology and theories, and we miss the havoc that we're creating by our thoughtlessness, our selfishness, and our pride. It's clear that they did not fully understand what they sought, but they understood it enough to know that they hadn't reached it yet, that they still had some farther to go. Maybe there was a realization that was starting to dawn. So let's go to the last point. Did they find what they were looking for? Back in the passage in Matthew there again. Matthew chapter 2, verse 10 says, "When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were coming to the house, they saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. It seems like maybe the light is dawning. They leave the king, they're pointed to Bethlehem, and they see the star again. They're thrilled to see the star again. On arrival, they're filled with wonder and an urge to worship. So I'd like to think a little bit how this may have looked. Wise men coming from a far country. If they were indeed the wise men of that country, they would have composed the upper echelons of the royal society. They would have been arrayed in very fine garments, especially since in their minds they were visiting royalty. And so they wanted to accurately represent the grandeur of their own country. It was a common thing for dignitaries from other countries to visit each other. Think of the Queen of Sheba when she came and visited Solomon and the huge train of presents that she brought along with her. And likely that is what these guys thought they were doing. So likely there was a number of them. And as these important people of the court, they probably had armed guards along with them too to protect them. The king didn't want them to be lost along the way, and he wouldn't have his important astrologers anymore. So there's probably, and again, this is supposition, but there was probably quite a group of them, quite a crowd, creating quite a stir in this little town of Bethlehem. This group of elegant, excited men, and I can see them, you know, quickly fumbling with straps and bundles, trying to unwrap these gifts that they'd brought over hundreds of miles of dry, rocky desert, quickly trying to be the first one in there, stumbling and over their long robes and elbowing each other for room. You know, odds are this was a little mud house. And I've seen lots of little mud houses, and there's not a lot of room in them. And, you know, I can see them wanting to be the, you know, make sure that they get in there and get their gift in and muttering at each other and come in and then being overcome with worship. And here is where the story really departs from the way that normal dignitaries acted with each other. They didn't worship each other. They were respectful. But here it says they worshiped. There was something different about this scene. And think of where they were again, in a little mud house. These elegant men with their armed escorts. What were they doing kneeling down on a mud floor in their rich robes? There was something that they knew was beyond them. And nobody says how Mary reacted. Maybe she held Christ protectively in her arms. Maybe she quickly called for Joseph and all the neighbors to come running. A lot of those cultures where they live very close-knit communities like that, nothing happens to one person. It happens to the community. And so I can imagine there was quite a crowd of onlookers and shoving, elbowing neighbors as well. But, you know, maybe by now, maybe it was Mary was getting used to the unusual stir that was caused by Jesus' birth. And then the gifts start to pile up, gold and frankincense and myrrh, gifts with tremendous symbolic significance, even though the wise men themselves, I'm sure, did not understand that. It was simply something that was precious. But gold denotes the kingship of Christ, frankincense, his divinity, and myrrh, pointing forward to his death. Did they maybe understand more than what they thought they did? They'd found the physical person now, but what about the divine? I like to think there maybe was a change after they left. It says that God warned them after they left. No longer were they just being led by a distant celestial body. God talked to them directly, and he said, don't go back the way you came. And they listened. They didn't go back. It would have made much more sense for them to go back through Jerusalem, been treated royally at the royal court the way they were used to being treated, where they had all the food they needed, comfortable beds to sleep in, and you know, be sent back with gifts of their own. Because if a dignitary came to visit you, you didn't send him back empty-handed. You gave him something back. And that would have been made the most sense for them to go back to Jerusalem and get those things and be treated the way their station should have had them be treated. But they didn't. God said, don't go back that way, and they didn't. They took the hard road home. They went around out through the little byways and slept out on the cold, hard ground and avoided that. So it seems like something changed. And I like to think that there was a change after this, that maybe there wasn't the noisy excitement that there had been before. Maybe more of a calm introspection. They had a lot to ponder. Did they return to their royal courts and study more deeply into the prophecies that they had? Did they consider the difference in their destination over what they had anticipated? Did they begin to realize that this child was much more than an earthly monarch? And an encounter with Christ for a true seeker always changes the seeker, doesn't it? He never leaves us the same if we're truly seeking him. And these men were searching. And although they didn't know they were searching for God, that's who they found. And as honest seekers and dedicated seekers, maybe I should say, I like to think maybe there was a way in which that kernel of truth entered their hearts and made a change for them, made them realize what they were actually facing, who they had actually worshipped, why they had worshipped. There are those that encounter God yet remain unchanged because of hardness of heart or bitterness. But these men seem to have been the opposite. After meeting Jesus, they avoid encounters with royalty. They take the hard road back home. And I believe that if they were seeking God, he showed himself to them, and it did make a difference in their lives. They didn't find what they were expecting, but they found something far better. Have you found what you're looking for? God or his plans for your life might look different than what we think they should look like. If we're honestly seeking, we'll change ourselves, or we will be changed when we encounter the true God. When he shows us his plan for us, we'll turn ourselves in that direction. It's easy to say we want to follow God, but if we have never made a difficult decision that goes against the flesh, we're not following him. If we search for God with the kind of dedication and determination showed by the wise men, we will find him. It may not be what we expected, but it will be glorious. If we find ourselves in the place where God wants us, in his very presence, we will, as these wise men did, bow down in worship and give the most precious things we have. We will give our lives. So if we have clear skies tomorrow night, December 21st, 2020, look toward the southwest horizon. See if you can see that star. And when you see the star, think of the wonderful, the counselor, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, and seek that star.